From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Texas floods, former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert indicted, soccer scandal, anthrax, and more hats in the ring for 2016. At least 24 dead, 14 still missing today after record rain brought flash floods in Texas and Oklahoma. Chuck Criswell lives along the Blanco River in Texas. He told NBC News it all came in a rush.
It looked like the water was going 500 miles an hour with debris just flying by.
Rick Santorum launched his second White House bid this week. The former Pennsylvania senator told supporters working families don't need another president tied to big government or big money.
And today is the day. Today is the day we are going to begin to fight back.
And U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch leveled big charges of corruption against the world's governing soccer body.
They were expected to uphold the rules that keep soccer honest and to protect the integrity of the game. Instead, they corrupted the business of worldwide soccer to serve their interests and to enrich themselves.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with McKay Coppins of BuzzFeed News, Mimi Swartz of Texas Monthly, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What are you seeing in Texas and Oklahoma? Has FedEx brought you anthrax? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. McKay Coppins is with us from New York City today, senior political writer at BuzzFeed News. McKay, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
Great to have you. From Houston, Texas, wet and wild, Mimi Swartz joins us, executive editor at Texas Monthly. She had her own tangle with floods this week. We've read about it. Mimi Swartz, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, McKay, and Mimi.
All flooding all the time down Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma way. Here's a little sound of the Blanco River bursting through the front door in Wimberley, Texas. Ernie and Sarah Perez were there. Sarah recorded the moment on her phone. Whirlpool in the living room.
Oh, no!
Good Lord. Listen to that. And here, Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Monday calling the flooding that has left so many dead the worst the region has ever seen.
Moments ago, I had the opportunity to fly over Blanco River and to observe firsthand what the devastation looks like. And you cannot candy coat it. It's absolutely massive.
Cannot candy coat it, says the Texas governor. Mimi Swartz, is the drought over now after all this rain, water has come down?
Well, I think we can say the drought is over for now. I mean, I'm in Houston, and there were people kayaking on a street next door to the bayou where I live.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, what happens from here on in today, we're again under a flash flood warning. So I've already had two appointments cancel on me and thought about canoeing over here. So we'll
I know
see.
You spent the night in a multiplex car park with your husband, who's put the seats back and stayed right there rather than try and drive home. My own brother lives in Dallas. They've got flash flooding in Dallas today. The candy coating piece of this, how are people talking about this in Texas, Mimi? Is this Texas is big and has big weather and weather extremes, or this is something new and different?
I don't think this is something new and different for most of us, because we're used to flash flooding in both Central Texas and in Houston. I mean, I don't mean to take issue with the governor, but I it's not the worst I've ever seen. We were marooned in our neighborhood during Tropical Storm Allison in 2001, so most of us have seen bad weather. Again, you know, I'm a little concerned about California. I was concerned about the drought. I was a lot more concerned about the drought than I was about this heavy rain. But I didn't lose my house, so it's easy for me to say.
Yeah, easy for you to say. Hundreds of houses inundated here, and the death toll is really...
It's high, 14.
Yeah, it's something to look at. Record rainfall, whether the governor's right about record everything, I don't know, but I have seen reports of record rainfall here. McKay Coppins, I don't know how this fits into any kind of national political conversation. I'm looking here, a climate researcher at Texas A&M. This is Andy Dressler.
saying, you know, that this is trying to figure out what could be related to climate change here and what isn't is sort of like trying to figure out which of Barry Bonds' home runs were caused by steroids use. It says, you know statistically that some of them were, but you don't know which ones. Does this make a Republican problem, McKay? Flooding in Texas and the whole climate conversation?
I think it's interesting. I don't know the answer. I think probably not. I doubt that, you know, it'll come to the forefront necessarily of, for example, the Republican presidential primaries. I think what you see a lot when there are these extreme weather events, and especially when they, you know, lead to a lot of casualties or deaths or damage, is that, you know, climate hawks or climate scientists and environmentalists who care a lot about this issue immediately will try to find ways to link it to climate change. And then conservatives and Republicans will immediately, you know, run to the other side of the corner, and they'll kind of throw talking points at each other. And then, you know, this goes on for a few days, and then we move on. I think that if you wanted to see an example of a really transcendent issue or incident where we would actually change the conversation nationally and in the political world, this probably is not it. So I doubt we'll see this actually have any serious effect on U.S. politics.
People do talk about weather extremes as potential evidence, like your Texas A&M guy there. Of course, Jeb Bush last week was talking about its intellectual arrogance to say that the science is clear on climate change. You got Chris Christie saying, global warming is real. Human activity contributes to it. Jack, what do you see here?
Well, you know, Tom, everything's bigger in Texas. The hair, the storms, the hypocrisy. Take Ted Cruz. You know, this week he demanded federal relief aid for inundated Texans. In 2013, he denounced such aid for the victims of Superstorm Sandy. 23 House Republican members from Texas voted against Sandy relief for stricken New Yorkers. How many do you suppose are against help to the folks in their home state today? You know, President Obama certainly should expedite the aid, but perhaps raise a rhetorical eyebrow over the situational compassion of Texas politicians.
Yeah, let's listen to our listeners on this. Ben in New Orleans on the line. Hi, Ben. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hey, as it got political, I just wanted to point out the irony that Senator Ted Cruz had originally voted against aid for Hurricane Sandy relief and is now calling for federal aid in his home state.
Jack's point, and New Orleans remembers there. You're not forgetting. Bitter irony for a New Orleanian, Ben?
I don't know. We're not the real losers here. The people in Texas are. Yeah. And I hope he would have the empathy to look out for everybody, not just his own people.
I appreciate your call from New Orleans, Ben. Let's get one from Edmond, Oklahoma. Patty's calling. Hi, Patty. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I grew up in Central Texas on the Guadalupe. We used to always go tubing on the Upper Guadalupe.
Mm-hmm.
We were more concerned growing up with what happened upstream, meaning how much rainfall fell 10, 15 miles above us. And Wimberley has turned more into a tourist community, which the people who rent homes to people who are coming in, they need to let them know. When it rains upstream, you will have a huge wall of water coming down.
Boy,
you need to watch. Don't go to bed.
Yeah.
Someone stay up.
Yeah.
And if you pay attention to that and get out, you will be safe.
We sure saw that this week, Patty. We saw it so clearly. Mimi, are there issues of overbuilding in flood zones here along the river? Those look like very nice places to be tubing on a dry summer day, but here came the rain.
Yeah, I think she's got a very good point, because if you grew up in Texas, pretty much anywhere that flooded, if you're like me, you've lost your car once, so you learned a hard lesson about driving in this weather. It's a lot like growing up in Vermont and you know when not to drive in the snow.
Yeah.
I think that... God, I'm so sorry. I've lost my train of thought. I think we're... give me a hint.
The hint
is
water.
I've been flooded out. My brain is dead.
Lots of water.
Yes.
Overnight in the multiplex parking lot. You think about it. We'll get Austin, Texas in here. John's calling from Austin. John, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm dry. How are you?
We're fairly dry. We got another inch last night, but it's been regularly coming. It's the wettest month in Austin's history right now.
What do you think of all this after all the drought that we've seen in Texas, John?
Absolutely. My question was, if we look at this isolated event, we might not be able to say that it's climate change. But if we look at the almost the drought of record in 2011, this event, the wettest amount that we've had in May that we've had, that's the wettest month of all time, plus California drought, if we add all those together, are we not maybe looking at a bigger subject related to climate change?
Jeb Bush might call it intellectual arrogance, but I'm looking here at a poll. John, I appreciate your call from Austin. McKay, here's a poll you probably saw. New York Times, January, this was along with Stanford, found overwhelming Americans wanted to back a candidate that supports fighting climate change, and 48% of Republicans. That's not small. I mean, you can argue over any individual expression here, but I wonder how you see this shaping up in the 2016 race. Does this become a bigger thing than it's been in the past?
Well, it very well could be. I mean, what I think is interesting about that poll and the general trend we see on this issue is that climate change in elections past and various environmental issues surrounding it was a wedge issue that Republicans and conservatives actually used to great effect.
Yeah.
You know, it was an advantage for them, right?
Drill, baby, drill.
Exactly. Well, and even in 2012, you saw Mitt Romney make a big play when he was going to coal states, saying that, you know, the Obama and the Democrats are trying to kill
They'll
coal
shut
jobs
you down.
Because right, exactly. And so I think that we might be reaching a tipping point on this issue. I mean, when 48% of Republicans say that they care about climate change and that they want to support a candidate that wants to fight it, that makes a difference. Now, that said, when you look at the Republican field right now, aside from Chris Christie, you haven't seen any of the serious candidates come out and say that they want to fight it and that they believe that climate change is man-made and a serious issue.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Texas floods, former Speaker of the House indicted, Dennis Hastert. Soccer scandal, live anthrax in the mail, and more hats in the ring for 2016. Mimi Swartz is with us. Executive editor at Texas Monthly joins us today from Houston, Texas. McKay Coppins is with us. Senior political writer for BuzzFeed News with us from New York City. Jack Beatty is here, and you can join us. McKay, I promise we'll come back to politics. We've got FIFA to look at. We've got Dennis Hastert. What a story. A couple more on floods in Texas, Oklahoma. Keaton is calling from St. Louis, Missouri. Keaton, you're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I am interested in the way that Texas cities are expanding. And as we have seen, Texas cities like Houston and Dallas are now some of the biggest cities in the country.
Yes, they are.
But this growth has resulted in the cities growing outward instead of upward into flood-prone areas. So I think that Texas city leaders need to look at the way their cities are expanding and do it in a more environmentally responsible way so that they're not putting their own citizens at risk in the apartments that they purchase and their homes that they purchase along.
Next time the waters come. Mimi, do you hear that kind of talk around Texas? We all saw the figures. You're growing like Topsy down there. Are people thinking about where the growth is happening?
I think certainly in Houston they are thinking about where the growth is happening, and I think more of it now is in the inner city and what we call inside the loop, and they are learning about density. I think we're learning to even like density here.
In Texas,
people are finding out they can walk. And I wouldn't go as far as to say we like bicyclers, because that's a whole other story about a sort of danger.
Don't go there? Okay.
Yeah, I think.
Sounds harmless.
Nah. But I think in the major cities here, you see a lot of push toward the kind of low-rise multi-use developments. I don't think we're still pushing as far outward as we used to.
One more, and we'll get out to bigger scandals here. Taylor, back to Austin, Texas. Taylor, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I was just curious if government is doing anything to conserve the water that's falling in Austin. I mean, you hear about what's going on in California where they're recycling sewage water, and it would seem much more reasonable to use, you know, flooding rainwater for something like that, or save it for a drought later in the year or something.
Never mind big oil, but let's think about big water this week. Everybody talks about whether we should have a pipeline to California. I don't know. McKay, Jack, Are we going to get into major public works to move water around at some point here? Texas has more than they need this week, Oklahoma too.
I mean, there's a rationality in it, and out there there may be some high-tech inventor who find a way to somehow transmogrify water into bits and send it to the West Coast and have it come out the tap. Who knows? But that's the kind of thinking that the future is undoubtedly going to hear more of.
Okay, I want to know about Dennis Hastert. That's just amazing, but we've got to deal with the FIFA scandal first, just for a second here. We've talked about it this week, but we saw the U.S. plunging right in here. Big charges, $150 million alleged in corruption, 14 charged, indicted. We saw them going out under bed sheets out of a five-star hotel in Switzerland. Here was Loretta Lynch talking about those charges. The U.S. wading in deep on FIFA.
Now, in many instances, the defendants and their co-conspirators planned aspects of this long-running scheme during meetings held here in the United States. They used the banking and the wire facilities of the U.S. to distribute their bribe payments, and they planned to profit from their scheme in large part through promotional efforts directed at the growing U.S. market for soccer.
So, big market, big money. The head of the FIFA up for re-election again today. By the time you hear us, he may have been re-elected or rejected. There's all kinds of tussling over that. He had a press conference yesterday. This is Sepp Blatter saying, hey, I can't keep track of everything.
I cannot monitor everyone all of the time. If people want to do wrong, they will also try to hide it.
Well, yeah, but you are the president for the last 16 years. McKay, I mean, shocked that there's skullduggery or corruption at FIFA. No one's really shocked, but people are surprised at the U.S. coming in with such a big hammer here. How do you interpret this, McKay? Is this payback for payoffs that took the World Cup to Russia and Qatar years ago?
So that is certainly a lot of the speculation you see. Also, if you monitor, you know, the social media conversation around this outside of the United States, you see a lot of people saying that this is sour grapes and what is the U.S. doing, you know, being the ones leading the charge on this. At the same time, basically everybody who's followed FIFA or soccer or this story at all knows that, you know, there's been corruption or charges of corruption for years and years, and it's an incredibly supposedly corrupt organization. In the political world, what you hear a lot of people saying is that they're stunned and impressed that Loretta Lynch decided to make this kind of her debut on the world stage. Up until now, outside of Washington, she was not really a very well-known figure. She hadn't done anything that a lot of people had paid attention to. Mostly, she was probably known as the person who couldn't get an up and down vote for up or down vote for her nomination.
But she was in Brooklyn, where this was all brewing for a long time.
Yes. And now that she's leading the charge, I've seen actually a reasonable amount of bipartisan praise. A lot of Republicans saying, you know, good for her for leading the charge here. This is something that we should be taking care of.
Jack, how do you read this? We had a caller from Iowa this week, the beloved Barbara, who was almost in tears at the beauty of Lady Liberty, the USA, raising the torch of truth and light over international soccer here. And one's tempted to scoff because there's just been so much trouble there for so long. But
why now?
Then why not? I mean, soccer's growing, you know, the bribes flying. Why not?
Why not? And it's on a gargantuan scale, $150 million and counting. You know, on this, McKay talks about sour grapes. Already Russia is saying, we beat you out for the cup for 2018. Now you're doing this prosecution. Qatar, they won the prize for 2022, but they should stay numb, Tom. Bribes may have tainted the awards, but Qatar is a special case. Building the facilities for its World Cup in human heat, one Nepali laborer dies every 2 days. After the Nepal earthquake, Qatar would not permit Nepalese to return home to help their country. Altogether, since 2012, about 1,000 third world workers have died in Qatar, many giving their lives for the World Cup. Now, that's a grotesque human sacrifice that puts FIFA corruption in the shade.
It is grotesque. I mean, there is talk, though. Switzerland looking at those awards of the 2018 and 2022 World Cup games and whether that might actually be changed. People saying maybe. Putin, speaking up from the Kremlin yesterday, defended Sepp Blatter. The FIFA president said the U.S. had no reason to get into all this. Here he is interpreted by Reuters, Vladimir Putin.
We can assume that some of them may have violated something. I don't know. But it is clear that the USA has nothing to do with that anyway. Those officials are not U.S. citizens. And if some event indeed happened, then it happened not on the United States territory, and the U.S. has nothing to do with that. This is yet another blatant attempt to extend its jurisdiction to other states.
Mimi Swartz, echoes of old boycotting the Moscow Olympics over Afghanistan, your Cold War kind of tremor again?
I don't know. Listening to that, I was wondering about something a little different, which is the banks. And, you know, is this going to be another situation where the sports figures and the sports executives are fined and the big banks who loan the money that paid for some of these, that perhaps paid for some of these bribes and perhaps paid for some of these organizations for FIFA to function the way it did, if they're going to get off?
Well, that would be the way of the world as we know it.
Yeah.
Alice in Auburn, Alabama. Alice, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just remember a few years ago that FIFA published something that they said they wanted the women's soccer uniforms to be sexier. And I don't know if that speaks to, in general, how they think, but...
Sexier uniforms for the lady players, and you're ready to string them up over corruption. I mean, maybe it's all one big ball of wax. Alice remembers. Memories are long. I have to say, McKay, it feels good to see people held to account, though, even people who deal in millions, and shown not to be exempt, that we don't just live in a corrupt universe here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I mean, you saw, so Vladimir Putin obviously never has anything to lose by finding a way to bash U.S.
No,
policy
or,
you know, this is a political winner for him. At the same time, while I was listening to him and, you know, thinking about the obvious political opportunism there, I was thinking about one of the things that has shown in the United States the advantageous politics of going after foreign officials and groups like this was the Sochi Olympics. If you remember, leading up to that, a lot of U.S. politicians and leaders eventually kind of spoke up about human rights abuses in Russia, about especially LGBT rights, and it became kind of a big issue that people cared about in the United States. So I wonder if that has kind of cleared the way, or at least given the incentive politically for United States officials to go after issues like this.
And of course, since Sochi, we've had the full-on Russian move into and around Ukraine, which has only heightened tensions there and maybe made Washington have not much reluctance to give Moscow some problems. I want to come back and bring it home to the U.S. Congress, where the Patriot Act and its mass surveillance provisions are expiring this weekend, and we've got the Senate coming back to look at that. Fred Upton here is a Republican congressman in Michigan, urging the Senate to get in behind what the House has passed called the U.S. Freedom Act with some more restrictions on phone data gathering. He talked with WSBT-TV's Bob Montgomery this morning. Here's the House guy from Michigan urging the Senate to follow their lead. They passed the USA Freedom Act 2 weeks ago.
It's a little bit like a balloon exploding at midnight. If it explodes at midnight, you cannot put it back together again, which is why you've got to take the bill that we did in the House in a very strong bipartisan way. I endured 9/11. We all did. We got to have every tool in the toolbox to try and prevent something like that from happening again.
And it
today
does put additional safeguards in
it
place.
It does. It really does.
Every tool in the toolbox, but not the wide-open surveillance that the Patriot Act ultimately came to be interpreted as endorsing. McKay Coppins, what do you see coming this weekend as this expires, or the balloon that explodes at midnight, as the congressman says?
It's really fascinating. When you talk to people in Washington and people on the Hill, very few of them thought, even you know, a couple weeks ago, that we would get to this point without having passed a bill. Rand Paul, obviously, is one of the senators leading the charge against reauthorization, or at least certainly passing the USA Freedom Bill. What I'm struck by, it's going to be a close vote. What I'm struck by is earlier this week, Rand Paul's office got a letter signed by 20 groups. Spanning from the Demand Progress on the left to the Sunlight Foundation to Tea Party Nation, all urging him to, kind of stick to his guns. So this is really a bipartisan issue that for somebody like Rand Paul, who's running for president, it's something that he can gain a lot from politically. But also, I think he's probably seeing that this is an issue where he can rally a lot of unique constituencies and get them together. So, it may well be that this does not reach reauthorization. I know that a lot of Republicans, a lot of neoconservatives and hawks will be very upset if that's the case, obviously.
Mimi, how are you reading this from Houston here? What's the Texas mood among in the GOP quarters, I guess, maybe Democrats too, when it comes to reauthorization or not?
Well, I think it's interesting, again, that it does make for strange bedfellows. I think this is the first time I've agreed with Ted Cruz on anything because he's willing to let the Patriot Act provisions expire as well. So we've got Rand Paul and Ted Cruz sort of battling it out. I think Texans would just as soon everyone stay out, that the government stay out of their lives unless you happen to be female. But, we'll see. I wonder... Again, if it rains hard enough in the next 2 days or 3 days, if people are going to forget about the Patriot Act again. I just wonder if the complexities of this are really going to if the average Texan's really going to care, unless someone like Ted Cruz can really simplify it enough and get them fired up enough to care.
Jack, when you're bailing out the living room, you may put the Patriot Act aside. But otherwise, people have been pretty fired up. And as Mimi says, with all kinds of cross-hatching here in terms of party lines and angles, what do you see coming, Jack?
Yes, and the claims are just getting out of hand. The White House is really hyping this. The Times this morning quotes the White House saying, letting this inspire would be, quote, playing national security Russian roulette. But they also
if we can't track every phone call in the United States of every citizen, it's Russian roulette. Okay.
That's what our White House is claiming. But in their reality check, the Times points out that there's something called the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board set up by Congress. The board found no instances, quote, in which the law had been abused. Well, that's good to know. But also none in which it had stopped a terrorist attack. And they quote one of the people who did the who worked on it. He says, it has some minor benefits, that is, this Patriot Act, that could have been accomplished through other legal means. That's pretty damning, it seems to me. That says there's a way to do this that would not be the shadow, as one judge put it, over all liberty in the United States.
Rand Paul, a burr in the saddle in other ways this week as well. Here he was on MSNBC on Wednesday, blaming his own party for the rise of ISIS, the Islamic State.
ISIS exists and grew stronger because of the hawks in our party who gave arms indiscriminately, and most of those arms were snatched up by ISIS. These hawks also wanted to bomb Assad, which would have made ISIS's job even easier. They created these people.
And he rolled right on. Everything they've talked about in foreign policy, they've been wrong about for 20 years, Rand Paul saying, of his own party, and yet they have somehow the gall to keep saying and pointing fingers. Otherwise, Wall Street Journal editorial page came back like gangbusters. Their headline, Rand Paul created ISIS. McKay, it must drive the rest of the Republican crew crazy here to have Rand out on that wing.
When I saw Rand Paul made that comment, I saw it live, and my initial thought was that he had kind of been baited into saying that, because the question was something like, well, how do you respond to Republicans who say that you're responsible for creating ISIS? But what was amazing is that I went back and reviewed, the comments that he's been making on these issues. For at least the last year, Rand Paul has been saying effectively the same thing. At least a year ago, he said, I personally believe ISIS would not be in Iraq and not be as powerful if we had not been supplying their allies. I think that this is an issue he wants to fight about, and he will continue to fight about it.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too. Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, for the second year in a row, there were co-champions at the Scripps National Spelling Bee, Vanya Shivashankar and Gokul Venkatachalam. Here's co-champion 14-year-old Gokul Venkatachalam spelling the last word of the bee last night.
Nunatak.
Nunatak. Nunatak. N-U-N-A-T-A-K. Nunatak.
Correct.
Nunatak, a word I've never said. Catholic Ireland became the first country in the world to vote in gay marriage by popular referendum. Here's Irish Senator David Norris in an interview with CBS News.
We are a beacon, but there are countries throughout Africa, Asia, Russia, you know, in which it is terribly dangerous still to be gay. So we're saying to them, be civilized, follow the Irish.
Follow the Irish in celebration, their big vote for gay marriage in Catholic Ireland. Interesting. And actress and comedian Anne Mira died at 85, part of the comedy duo Stiller and Mira with her husband, Jerry Stiller. On the Ed Sullivan Show, they riffed on their Catholic and Jewish backgrounds.
It's really nice, though, you know, how all our holidays come at the same time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love that one you folks have around Christmas time. What do you call it? You know, the one with all the candles. Chanukah, that's beautiful.
What, you mean Hanukkah?
Yeah, Hanukkah.
No, Hanukkah. CH is pronounced chuch.
Oh, I see. Well, Merry Christmas.
Good stuff. We're looking at a week in the news. Texas floods. Dennis Hastert indicted. Soccer scandal. Anthrax. More hats in the ring for 2016. Mimi Swartz is with us from Texas Monthly. Executive editor there joins us from Houston, Texas. McKay Coppins, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, is here from New York. Jack Beattie's with us as well. Celebration on the streets of Dublin on Sunday. After that, yes vote on same-sex marriage. Jack Beattie, give us the perspective, son of Ireland, down to the years. This is something else. This is something different for Ireland.
Irish eyes are smiling. Yes, you know, and it's and they're so proud of it. That's what really comes to you, that they're, you know, we have done this. We're the we're the first people to do this. And it throws into relief, as everyone has said, the waning influence of a particular brand of Catholic Church there. You know, the church wasn't uniformly opposed to this. Priests here and there were for it.
Though the Vatican condemned it, ultimately.
The Vatican condemned it, yeah. And it helps to, it really shows also how far the church lost moral authority over the Irish conscience through the long and sordid scandals about abusing children and taking children away from families and so on. That has really and perhaps even irreparably hurt the Catholic Church in Ireland.
And then another vote out of relatively conservative Nebraska this week over voting to overturn a veto and bring in or abolish the death penalty, I should say. Independent Nebraska State Senator Ernie Chambers tried to repeal that death penalty 38 times over 40 years in office. He finally got it. He spoke at the state capitol in Nebraska after the vote.
Today, we are doing something that transcends me, that transcends this legislature, that transcends this state. We're talking about human dignity.
Nebraska says no to the death penalty. Patrick is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Patrick, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I'd just like to say that Senator Chambers worked tirelessly, as you just said there, for the last 40-some years to get this passed, and he managed to form a unique coalition of anti-death penalty people, as well as several conservative state senators who realized that we are just spending too much money on something that's not going to happen. And for several years, again, I reiterate, Senator Chambers has called himself, which he is, the defender of the downtrodden in the state of Nebraska.
Nebraska now joins 18 other states and Washington, D.C. in banning the death penalty. I mean, but your governor there, Patrick, is very staunchly against this, Republican Pete Ricketts. I mean, how did they put together the votes to get past that veto?
For one thing, the anti-death penalty group in the state of Nebraska lobbied heavily to all the state senators, be they Republicans, progressives, or whomever, and the coalition of votes held together to override the veto of the governor. And I think a lot of the argument also was, you know, the same arguments we always hear, that it's not a it was not a deterrent to murder, and it was administered unfairly, racially, and so forth.
The Times describes the debate as somber, fiery, soul-searching quotes from Ruth Bader Ginsburg and John Paul Stevens and the Book of Genesis, and Nebraska goes against the death penalty. Patrick, thanks for your call. Can we go to Dennis Hastert? This is the long time, I think longest-serving ever Speaker of the House. Retired, like so many others, become a lobbyist, and now we see word of these indictments coming down saying that he had been funneling money to somebody in his home state of Illinois, not claiming it in the proper way, and now he's facing legal charges. It goes back to something from years ago in his life that is not fully spelled out yet. McKay, what do we know?
Yeah, it's a pretty you know, we don't know what is really going on here yet. We know that he agreed to pay an unnamed individual $3.5 million for a previous misconduct. That's all it says, against an unnamed individual. Obviously, a lot of people are investigating what is actually going on. We at BuzzFeed News actually have two sources saying that the U.S. attorney agreed to withhold details of the prior misconduct in the indictment under some pressure. You know, we don't know exactly what's happening here, but it's hard to imagine that $3.5 million is funneled to somebody and there wasn't a pretty serious quote unquote misconduct. And so I think that there's a lot more to this story, and hopefully it's we'll learn about it soon.
Hastert was a high school teacher and a wrestling coach in Yorkville, Illinois. He worked in Yorkville from 1965 to 1981, well before he became Speaker of the House. But the indictment says that he's so far paid $1.7 million out of a promised $3.5 million for misconduct years ago to someone, doesn't say his or her, gender interestingly left vague here, that had known Mr. Hastert for most of his or her life, meaning this has a familiar feeling to it, even without knowing the details.
Well, all I can say is I think it's jump ball for long-form journalists. I think, you know, I'm waiting for the long story that looks at his life in detail and will point some fingers at likely subjects.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, you don't know. I mean, it's unfair to speculate here, but, you know, former high school teacher, years later, all this, it has the sense of something that was, misconduct is right there in the indictment all those years ago. We'll see.
Misconduct of $3 million proportions, which is serious misconduct and perhaps even sordid misconduct. You know, he was the longest-serving Republican speaker. Sam Rayburn beats him out on the Democratic side. And this is just a terrible way for him to be remembered. He was very proud of what he had done as speaker. And by all accounts, he was a pretty good speaker. He got a lot of things passed for President Bush. But now this is going to bring him down.
McKay, take us to the 2016 races. There's a fair amount of action this week. You had Rick Santorum, who came up second to Mitt Romney last time out, who won in Iowa last time out, announcing his second run for the presidency on Wednesday. And here he was saying he stands for the working people, kind of populist message from Rick Santorum.
I am proud to stand here among you and for you, the American workers who have sacrificed so much, to announce that I am running for president of the United States.
Blue-collar conservative, he calls himself. He was very tough on social values last time, this time really putting that populism out front. People are hurting, and I'm going to help. What propelled him last time, McKay, and what about this time? How do you see the chemistry?
Right. I mean, these are two very different elections. In 2012, there was not a particularly strong Republican presidential field. There was a lot of animosity flowing toward Mitt Romney at the Republican mm-hmm. base. And conservative voters kind of took turns going from one Mitt Romney alternative to another for much of the primary. Santorum kind of landed there last and rode that wave through much of the primary. You can understand why he's running again. Traditionally, the Republican Party has almost always nominated the runner-up to the last contended primary.
So it's his turn, or his
so.
Suggests.
So that's the theory. That's the concept. Obviously, in this primary field, it's much more competitive, much more crowded. And Rick Santorum has been out of office for a long time. What is interesting, and I've talked to some people in the Santorum campaign about this, is that he is pretty deliberately not necessarily scuttling his very conservative social agenda, but trying to reframe it as being pro-family, not just in terms of the marriage issue or abortion, mm-hmm. but also in terms of finances and family finances. And this whole idea of being a blue-collar conservative is a pretty deliberate attempt to reframe a culture war agenda and place it in the context of our current economic debate.
I mean, what do you see emerging here, McKay? You've got this new poll out has 10% apiece for Jeb Bush, Ben Carson, Mike
really
Huckabee,
amazing.
Marco Rubio, and Scott Walker. Unbelievable. And then Rand Paul, this Quinnipiac, 7%, Ted Cruz, 6%, Donald Trump, 5%, Chris Christie, 4%, Ohio Governor John Kasich, and Carly Fiorina, Hewlett Packard CEO, 2%. Santorum not in for this one. What do you see emerging here, McKay?
I can't remember. I was going through past Republican primaries. It's not very common to have this crowded of a field and the candidates so clustered together at the top. We talk about this every presidential cycle. In this cycle, it actually seems like a distinct possibility that we could get to the Republican convention without a clear nominee who has collected enough delegates. That obviously for journalists is like the dream to cover a floor fight. Hasn't happened since the 70s.
It sounds like the Civil War era.
Right. At the same time, the Republican Party officials dread that. And actually, the way that they tried to lay out the primary calendar and regulate the debates, only allowing certain networks to host debates and not allowing candidates to participate in other ones, it was all geared toward trying to avoid a situation like that and end up with a nominee faster. And it now looks like it could have the exact opposite effect.
And what do you make of
George, a fun story?
George Pataki getting it? Former New York governor, haven't heard from him in a long time, well understood as a moderate in the GOP. I thought the days of moderate GOP candidates were behind us.
Well, they very well still may be. Pataki is not considered a
hello, George.
So far a serious threat for the presidency. But although I think it's kind of unfair, as he's been out of office for roughly as long as Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, who have been getting a lot more coverage. I think the thing with Pataki obviously is that he's a social moderate to liberal, right? And the Republican Party have they not nominated a candidate like that, they haven't even come close. So he certainly have the two spectrums of the social conservative and liberal agenda in the Republican primary this week. I doubt that either one, Rick Santorum or Pataki, will end up the nominee, though.
I want to compare a couple flavors of economic populism that we heard this week. We heard right there from Rick Santorum. On the other hand, you had Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont officially launching his campaign, big party in Burlington, Vermont, on Tuesday, saying very loud and clear he'll focus on income inequality.
The issue of wealth and income inequality is the great moral issue of our time. It is the great economic issue of our time. It is the great political issue of our time, and we will address it.
Bernie Sanders, emphatic there. Margaret in Richford, Vermont. Thank you for calling, Margaret. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm so happy that Bernie Sanders is running for president of the United States in 2016. And I was there on Tuesday for his launch, and his speech was a marvelous speech. He addressed us as my fellow Americans, brothers and sisters, and nobody else can speak to us on those terms.
Would you take him over Hillary Clinton, Margaret?
What's that?
Would you prefer him to Hillary Clinton?
Definitely. I prefer him to Hillary Clinton. And he is the one who speaks to all of our issues today. And as the clip that you just played was about the money and the fact that our children can't afford to go to college, or if they go, they have to spend to get into debt for decades on it, and all of the opportunities for the middle class, which Bernie grew up with in his generation, are denied to people today. So Bernie is speaking on our behalf. He is for the people, and he's going to win. I think that it's a joke that the press is ignoring him, and on the front page of the New York Times after Bernie's launch speech, they had some popcorn article about Hillary Clinton. And it's just amazing to me how the press is ignoring this great speaker, this great candidate.
Talk about Bernie, Margaret. Our time is short. Mm-hmm. Margaret would put him right out there. Mimi, compare the economic populism of Rick Santorum with that of Bernie Sanders.
Boy, I think I tend to believe Bernie Sanders. I don't exactly believe Rick Santorum because even though I may have short-term memory issues, I do remember Rick Santorum. So,
not that short.
And there's an inconsistency with Rick. I mean, you know, he says that for 35 years his party's been hung up on cutting taxes for the rich, yet he advocates a flat tax, which would cut taxes on the rich. So Bernie is not for that. You know, Tom, in 1860, the Republican slogan was, vote yourself a tariff, vote yourself a farm. Bernie Sanders, vote yourself free college, vote yourself 30 days paid vacation and sick leave. Sounds good to me.
Vote yourself a tariff, vote yourself a farm. And is that what he's calling for, 30 days paid sick leave?
That's it. I don't know about 30 days.
For everybody.
Vacation, yeah.
30 days vacation.
He's talking about Finland. They do it.
Finland. Nice. Hey, we're back to Finland. Okay. Hey, listen, the issues out there, Rick Santorum can smell it too. So Bernie Sanders is not alone in picking up on the economic distress of a big chunk of this country. That's going to be absolutely fascinating to see that play out through both these parties. Bernie, Hillary, of course, you've got more coming into the Democratic Party here as well. And all the Republicans lined up. McKay Coppins at BuzzFeed News, thank you so much for being with us today, McKay. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Mimi Swartz in flood-drenched Texas. Stay dry, Mimi, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Jack Beatty, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay dry, wet, whatever you need. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.